to Community Radio,
KBOO, Portland.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
I'm Tony Epstein, and this is the Magical Mystery Tour. Join us as we dive into the heart of things, exploring new ideas and new ways of seeing and being in this wondrous, crazy world we share together.
This is a journey into sound.
Brought to you in living color.
It's happening. I can feel it.
How would you explain it?
It's beautiful. God, it's God. I see God.
How do you like that?
Why, it's preposterous.
Thank you very much.
The fault, dear Buddhist, is not in our stars, but in ourselves.
Correct.
Good luck. We care about your world.
My guest is Kelly Harrell. She's an animist, death walker, and death doula. Through her nature-based soul-tending practice, she helps others ethically build thriving spiritual paths through rune work, animism, ancestral tending, and death work. She's the author of several books, and her new book that we're going to be talking about is From Elder to Ancestor, Nature Kinship for All Seasons of Life. I love this new interconnection between your work as a death walker and death doula and shadow work and our relationship with the world and how that is filtered. And as you say, even possessed by our cultural systems that have evolved over time into these kind of autonomous systems that disconnect us from our natural place in the world and our true nature.
I think that conceptually you're picking up on something that is challenging even for people who are animistic. Their worldview is to experience that everything is alive. It's an added step to understand that the systems that corral us and control us to a large degree are also alive. They are beings that we have fed into, either intentionally, unintentionally, unconsciously, that eventually cultivate their own agency. And that works against us. I mean, in many systems, they're created to keep us controlled. And so that agency starts to work against us, and it doesn't want to die. It doesn't want to go away. And so for me as an animist, that's where this idea of you generate change from within doesn't work. We have to diminish our relationship to those systems so that it isn't feeding off our agency anymore, and we choose to give our agency to perhaps even out-created systems that aren't here yet, or maybe even really ancient ones that we know worked really well to meet people's needs. That's a challenging thought, even for people who view the world as an animist.
And the key words seem to be agency, that within these cultural systems, we lose our agency, we lose our consciousness, we lose our sense of self-responsibility and responsibility to the world around us through this kind of systematic disconnection and separation from everything around us. And as you said, we need to reestablish our integral, innate, natural sense of agency with everything.
Yeah. And I mean, I would even say we don't lose our agency, but we lose our awareness of our agency, which is poisonous. Like it's just as debilitating. And working to cultivate that awareness is really difficult, particularly if you're marginalized by those systems in a way that's felt on a daily basis. And I think at the end of the day, we all are. We just don't all know that. But some of us absolutely know it in a lived experience on a daily basis that our agency is occluded by those systems.
Well, what's so challenging is that the people in power are the ones who are least aware of it because they're the ones who so far have been the greatest beneficiaries of it and are the last to realize how they are going down upon the same ship with everybody else.
I've asked myself that question so many times, like, you know, what dissonance is in play that they don't realize there will be no one left to control? There will be no resources left to dominate.
And you say that we can't change these systems, that we have to, again, kind of take back our agency and reestablish, recreate our relationships with everything around us in new ways. And it reminded me of an old saying of Buckminster Fuller, who said, you don't struggle against old systems. You create new ones that make the old ones obsolete. Mm. And that's such a hard thing to wrap our minds around because there are a lot of activists up here in Vermont and everyone is pretty much indoctrinated into going out onto the streets and protesting against, you know,
right,
living the struggle against the great evil and kind of living out, manifesting that sense of disconnection with the real world, with the natural world, and what is possible when we reestablish that kind of agency and sense of relationship with everything around us. Because it was another wonderful thing that you mentioned in the book somewhere about when we are engaged and when we're connected, then this process of becoming human, of humaning and then eldering becomes natural and we respond to challenges in new ways that we never even imagined were possible before. And I think that's where so many people get stuck, is that if they can't see a way out from where they are in this moment, they don't think that there's any way out other than using old approaches, which so far have been fighting against, struggling against, going to war against. Even people who are peaceniks, who are trying to change the world in these ways, are still using the old paradigm of fighting and struggling and going to war against, even if they don't use the term war and fighting.
I feel like the indigenous communities that we live among know how to accomplish what we need right now. They understand the relationship to nature has to be not just included, but foremost. And they have, I'm going to butcher this because I'm not an indigenous person on the land that I live on. This is purely the perspective of somebody seeing exactly what you've said, that our leadership doesn't know how to do that. It doesn't know how to put that relationship first, which means none of us get put first either. We are the land. And this is what indigenous communities have understood consistently and have cultivated thousands of years of community, family, ritual, and just mindset around how to conduct life in support of even just that one thing. And I think often, even in my own teaching and working with people, when we have these conversations, we're having them about ourselves as an individual. What do I need to change? How do I need to look at my life in a different way? Or how do I do animism better? That's probably the one question I get the most, which are all awesome things to have on your mind and all good projects to have on your plate. And I think it starts there. But part of that is realizing we are not individuals, and we never have been. We are in relationship with the space around us, with the ecosystem all the time, to say nothing of with each other and other unseen components. And so that change ripples out. That's one thing. The other thing is to take that mindset to the systems level and say, we have to see that kind of change at that level also. And we just haven't in our leadership up to this point. And I don't think we are capable of that with the current systems in place. They have to be replaced by some amalgam of indigenous perspectives, because they do know how. They do have those technologies. They have those practices. They have the relationships with the ecosystems to be able to make that kind of change and teach it.
Yes, it has to come from a direct embodied experience of being, of standing on the earth, as you say, as nature, as members of it, not just as individual pieces or parts of it, and especially not through an intellectual understanding of it. It has to be directly embodied. And that's something that our culture eclipses by its very nature.
Yes, you're right. You know, I often hear people say, animism is the belief that everything is alive. And my gut check on that is it isn't a belief. It is an experience. It is your awareness. It is how you move through all of life, all the time, with the awareness that everything is sentient, that it is in relationship with each other, including you, and that it all has agency, which means our agency impacts each other all the time, and we're deeply responsible for how that goes. And so, you know, what you're saying is absolutely spot on. It can't be an intellectualized thing. It has to be felt and it has to be lived.
And I really want to dive more into your work as a death walker and death doula, because I think a lot of this has to do with being able to accomplish that work with these systems. Because in our culture, our ancestors, for most of us, are unhealthy ancestors who have not died well, who, as you call them, the unquiet dead. So I would love to get into talking about how and at what levels we need to do this kind of work with our ancestors, because when they exist in that way, and of course, most of us are completely unaware that we have any relationship with them or are affected by them, when they are in that unquiet, incomplete state of having passed on but not really moved on, they live within inside of us and affect our lives. And it strikes me that this work of death walking is critical, and that we have to understand this concept and then find ways to implement it in our lives. And in many ways, this is like the essence of shadow work, but I've never heard people who do, you know, classic shadow work talk about it in this way. So this is a new connection for me that feels really important.
I love that you're going there, and I love all of the things that you're pulling together. If we don't live well, we don't die well. And on the surface, it's like, oh, that makes perfect sense. But then we're like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean to live well? Ideally, it means that our lives are lived in such a way that we have the skills and the education and the support and the community to be able to handle the things that come up in our lives. We know that we have the resources and relationships to help us move through our traumas that inevitably happen. And at the point of death, we are not taking those with us. And we get the death rites at the point of death so that we are fully done here. There are steps to this, and that's a couple of them. So if we don't get that, then we stay connected here in some way that is not beneficial, in all kinds of different ways that it would not be beneficial. And the connection that you're making directly to death walking and these systems and the ancestors and shadow work is absolutely spot on, because when we don't move on well, we exacerbate the existing currents in everyday life that aren't well, which includes those systems. And when you elevate that conversation further to our ancestors who did not get proper death rites, like just to boldly state, they have not gotten proper death rites since we were animistic culture thousands of years ago. So we have a backlog of dead that have not been death walked appropriately. They're the ones that made those systems. They still want them to be in place. They don't understand them not being in place. And so there's work there that has to be done. And key among them is often helping them to understand you are their living component that is now being impacted by those systems in a harmful way. Like the loop, the full circle has happened. And being able to step into that dynamic and where possible have those conversations with ancestors is part of the work of ancestor tending. But that's also part of, at a spiritual level, how these systems get death walked. If we aren't giving them agency anymore, that's one part of it. And if the ancestors who created those systems don't need to give those systems agency anymore, then that's when those systems get to die off. That's when we have the opportunity to build something that is sustaining and healthy for everybody involved.
So does it boil down to an individual process that we each have to do to stop giving them power, in the sense that by not doing our own individual shadow work, that they stay alive in us? Because you also talked about how we have to do this on a collective level. And that's where this kind of work always gets tricky, particularly in the context of how in our culture these days, there's so much talk about not contributing to more harm from the Me Too movement and Black Lives Matter. And yet all of us are unconscious of the fact that we're still carrying around these ancient legacies of ancestral harm that are still acting through us despite our best intentions.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. There is a component of it that is personal work. There is a component of it that is collective work. And every step along both of those has to include the exploration of, is this the right work for me to be doing? Am I the right person to do this next step? And being willing to accept when you're not, and who you need to turn to take the next step, who does have the skill set, who does have the emotional distance or the openness to be able to take whatever that next step may demand. Because sooner or later, it will always bump into things that you are doing every day that you don't realize you're doing. No matter how far back in your ancestral lineage you do healing, yes, you can shift collective dynamics through that whole lineage, but it will always come down to thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, memories, components that are in your body that you don't necessarily have a name for, but felt sense that you have to become aware of and shift in your everyday life, as well as that whole collective lineage component. And that's the hard part, honestly. The ancestral work is challenging. It is not the feel-good work of soul work. And I think that's something that people don't understand, and they get disenchanted with it very quickly because it doesn't feel like, you know, who is my spirit ally? What spirit ally walks with me? This is the deep end of it all, and I think the work of our time. And so it doesn't feel good, and it still has to be done, and it will poke you in things that show up in your everyday that have to change.
Yes, and it's also easy to get lost in this work because it's so uncomfortable that we kind of instinctively go unconscious to avoid it as a kind of survival mechanism. And we really need the help of elders to help guide us through this kind of minefield, in a sense.
Very well said. If you have a community of people who are skilled in this work, or at least bringing a container of safety, accountability, and possibly a collection of skills to be able to do this work, I think that is the best way to do it, because doing it in a vacuum eventually is just reinforcing biases or habits that you cannot make yourself be aware of. Having other people, ideally from different backgrounds, who can help hold the space for each of you to do whatever your version of that ancestral work is ideal.
And you say numerous times in the book that we're not meant to do this kind of work alone. And I think it's because we're not capable of doing anything alone.
Absolutely. And we're not really alone. That's another awareness thing. It's another trick and lie of American settlerism, American settler culture. It has tricked us into this experience of individualism that is not sustainable. It's not healthy. It isn't real. We are already in relationship with everything around us, even within ourselves, with components of ourselves in our inner cosmologies. And so being able to be engaged at that level keeps you in your lane, and it helps you to change lane when you need to.
And there's this wonderful term that you use, moving among.
So words are hard. I'm a writer. I love words. My entire lifelong education was how to word well. And having to work back through that in my own way, for the way that my language is English, it is classist, it is isolating, and in many cases does not indicate awareness of relationship with space around me. And so I've had to work through how I really say things. What do I really mean? What am I really experiencing? That the way that I have been trained to speak it is not accurate of what I'm experiencing, or how I'm experiencing this thing to be. And understanding that my language cannot do that. There are things that cannot be held with language. And one of those was what it really means to stand in animistic awareness. And I hear people say, well, it means that you move with the relationships around you. And I'm like, no, I don't move with them, because that again indicates a sort of separateness. They are them, I am me, and we are with. And that's not enough. That's not animistic enough. And then I was like, well, okay, we move through relationships. No, that sounds violating. That sounds like I am completely ignorant of the space around me and I'm just getting from point A to point B. And I'm like, no, that's not it either. And there's no personhood in expressing it that way. And the thing that I came back to over and over was moving among, that I'm not with, I'm not through, I am among the relationships everywhere I go. And the only way that I can experience those relationships is through movement, through holding my awareness that no matter where I am in relationship with that space. And I've had teachers who would double down on that even more and say, we are family with that space. We have never been separate from that space, even perhaps a space you just got to for the first time in this body. We are moving among relationships all the time.
I love that. And another way of languaging that is the notion that we are in a constant conversation with everything around us, all the time, whether we're aware of it or not, and that everything is continually affecting everything else.
Absolutely. I love it.
And again, that reinforces this notion that we are not meant to shoulder all of this work and responsibility alone. We are meant to do this among and being family with everything. And that's such a hard concept for our culture. I think we have spent millennia disconnecting ourselves from that and trying to protect ourselves from the natural world in order to create a sense of control and security and survival. So it goes against everything that we have been practicing for millennia.
Yes. And know that there are indigenous populations who, while deeply affected by our colonization of place, they have held on to rituals and traditions that allow them to move among consistently without disruption to their relationship. And I feel like it's important to honor that. It's also important to ask yourself why that disruption and what happened to our elders. That's in part what the book is addressing, and what existed before the way we currently move in our culture. I feel like there is not much conversation about exploring what our indigeneity would have been in our ancestral work. And there's some taboo around that. There's plenty of room for people to do that in a disrespectful way that would be reinforcing a lot of the isms that we're wanting to tend, if not heal, by doing that kind of ancestral exploration. But when we sit with what was before these thousands of years of not doing our death rites, of movement and colonization and displacement and harming of other peoples, what was before that? And what we brush up against eventually is there was indigeneity. There were small groups that were regionally located with land-based identity that had rituals of animistic approach, that had land and nature spirit relationships unbroken to this place or this region. And how are we able to reach back into those through our ancestral tending and reclaim them in a way that is accurate to what is right for us to do, that is tending the people who live in those regions now, who've had a whole different experience of the last few thousand years? How do we do that respectfully that isn't disruptive for them? And how do we do that in a way that isn't disrespectful to the land that we live on now, which may or may not be still stewarded by unbroken relationship in indigenous community? There's a lot. There's a lot to have to take into consideration. And I feel like with people that I work with, it becomes overwhelming, like you said earlier, and there's like a dissonance, there's a disenchantment that happens. And that is the fragility that we all read about now. That is the point of, I guess, maximum stress response, that we just kind of sit back and go, either this isn't for me, maybe I'm not doing it right because I don't think it's supposed to feel this uncomfortable, or I literally do not have the resources to know how to go further. It is a challenging and complex thing to do.
And of course, in the West here, we don't have a tradition of elders to help with it. But you have a Nordic ancestry, and you talk about a couple of terms that might help flesh all this out. Frith and Frithgard, as a way of relating to the world that you could anchor from your own experience, perhaps?
Yes. Yes, comma. I feel like it is important to acknowledge when we are standing on this land in the West that we have to know how we got here. That's one of the exercises I have people do in some of my coursework early on is research how you got here. How did your feet end up on this land, like as far back as you can go to understand that? And we have to understand that we can't just cherry pick whatever we want and be respectful to other spiritual traditions, to the land spirits, the ecosystem that we live among, the human persons who might still be stewarding this land unbroken, to the relationships in ancestral lands that are also unbroken. We have to be able to hold all of that in some way that creates a viable spiritual path for us, not just all these scattered things to heal, but that's part of our cosmology. That's part of what we're dipping into and in relationship with on a regular basis that helps us do what we came here to do. And the majority of people that come to me don't know how to do that. They have multiple ancestral lines converging, some of which disagree with each other about how to accomplish being the human. And I am as broken path as anyone else. So for me to say that